Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Edler, then to Horvat in the slip. He scores! Bo Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slip. Pettersson scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Vic Nizar.
What's going on? Yeah, Travis Green has the line blender out at Canucks practice. We've got the blender out here at Sportsnet 652. No Vic Nizar. He's off this week. I'm Jamie Dodd. Joining me today, the co-host of the program 4-7, it is Satyar Shah. Sat, I know you guys on the program have the day off today because we're running the Blue Jays a little later. So thanks for joining me here on Central. How's it going?
It's going well, man. I'm excited to be on the show and talk some Canucks with you. It's my old stomping grounds, Canucks.
Yeah, that's right. The return. You're back.
The not so glorious return. And I'll join you on Friday as well on Canucks Central at noon. And tomorrow, Andrew Walker is going to be on at noon as well. So the program, boys, because Jays are on those days doesn't mean that we will not be on the airwaves at all. So we look forward to chatting with you, especially in lots happening, man. Canucks practice, lines in a blender, Jake Virtanen, public enemy number one again. The more things change for Canucks training camp, the more they stay the same.
That, you know, I was saying that last week, right? It's like this training camp is so weird. It's in July. We're going right into the playoffs. And then what are we talking about? Now, Jake Virtanen, not up to speed yet. It's the same thing we're always talking about.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is always the same thing, more or less, right? So with Jake, and, you know, we'll get into all this. I'm here to just chat with you, and we'll kind of guide our way through this. But I'd be very careful with counting out Jake completely already.
Sure, and we should say also, before we get into the line mixing and some of the other stories happening, Zach MacEwen, one of the breakout star, really, of Canucks training camp so far, will join us in just about half an hour here on Canucks Central, Jamie Dodd and Satyar Shah. So look forward to that. Zach MacEwen, really excited to get a chance to chat with him. But I mentioned it right off the top. You know, Travis Green, we've gotten very used to seeing certain line combinations together thus far through training camp. And after the day off yesterday, he decided to go in a very different direction at the on-ice session today. So just if you haven't caught it yet, here is how the Canucks lined up at forward. It was Pettersson skating between Tanner Pearson and Brock Besser, Bo Horvat with Antoine Roussel and Zach MacEwen, Adam Gaudette with JT Miller and Tyler Toffoli, and Jay Beagle with Michael Ferland and Tyler Motte. Louis Erickson, Jake Virtanen, and Brandon Sutter were the extra forwards. Now, obviously, we don't want to read too much into this. These are not the lines you're going to see opening night against Minnesota. But, Sat, what do you make of this little experiment by Travis Green?
I think more than anything, it's to keep things a little fresh throughout 2 weeks of training camp and just give a different look. And they're not going to have a lot of preseason games, right? And they may have one more scrimmage, perhaps two, in the one preseason game next week against the Winnipeg Jets. So if you want to try anything and get a sense for stuff, you're going to have to do this in practice. I wouldn't read too much into Travis mixing these things up. We'll hear from Travis when he joins everybody via Zoom, and I'm sure he's going to say something along those lines. Change things up a bit, see what this looks like. And in theory, though, this is something you might see, let's say, in game one or game two, things kind of change, or it gets later in the game, they want to nurse a lead, for instance, to put Roussel and MacEwen with Bo Horvat, for instance, and you perhaps help out Adam Gaudette by putting Toffoli and Miller there. They can drive play a bit more. You can have three lines, you know, really grinding the team down with a lead later in games. I think this is Travis just experimenting more than anything and looking at situational ways that the lineup could look once you actually start playing. They don't have a lot of preseason games, right? So this is the place you're going to have to experiment with things.
Yeah, that's the line that stood out to me too, is one we could actually see Horvat with Roussel and MacEwen. If you really want to load up a line of come to your best two-way checking forwards and put it up against the other team's top group, that would be the option. So I think there's a little bit of, you know, trying to give the team a boost of energy here midway through training camp. Then the other thing I wonder, you know, this is such a weird, fluid situation that the NHL is in, and you don't know when you're going to lose a player or if you're going to lose a player once you go into the bubble, right? It's not just the normal injury risk. There's also the risk of COVID, of course. And so things can change in the blink of an eye. And I wonder if this is Travis Green just trying to get his players used to the idea of, hey, just because I'm skating with these guys, you know, on Thursday, come Friday, the situation could change completely and I have to be ready to adapt to a new situation. I wonder if that's part of it, is just making sure his guys are on their toes and ready to change no matter what's thrown at them.
That's the only way you can approach this. You're going to have to mix things around. Now, if you want to be a cynic, Jamie, you can kind of look at the lines that Batch tweeted out and say, well, why is Jake Virtanen not taking a regular shift? Is that, you know, a really bad sign? Now that Travis is mixing things up, Jake still finds himself as the extra and getting mixed in here and there. And I think that's the kind of storyline to keep an eye on. But one thing to keep in mind, too, is when you flip over to the power play formations, Jake Virtanen came in and out with Antoine Roussel on the second unit. And who was a staple as a PK pair? Well, it was Brandon Sutter and Louis Erickson. Louis Erickson didn't find himself in one of the top four lines either. He was an extra that rotated in and out as well. So when you start reading between the lines a little bit, don't expect that these four lines that we saw is really going to be something he's considering. It goes back to what you said more than anything. Zach MacEwen has shown defensively that he is progressing. Can he perhaps play that role on a Horvat line? Roussel skating better defensively. He can drive play as well. Can you get away with putting him there? Those are the ones to keep an eye on. And for Gaudette, though, I do think, Jamie, that if you're looking at running Gaudette out a lot, especially in the third period of a tight game in the playoffs, you probably want to put a couple of guys with him that can really push play and don't rely on him too much in his own end.
And you're probably going to be using him in an offensive situation mostly is what you want, right? So, right. Yeah, it makes sense to try to get him used to playing with those guys. And, you know, yeah, like you said, depending on the situation, you can give those guys some offensive zone starts. If you're chasing the game, you can use Horvat with Roussel and MacEwen if you're trying to nurse a lead. So it gives Travis Green some different options to go to. And it's Canucks Central here on Sportsnet 650. Safiar Shaw and Jamie Dodd with you. And just as a reminder, Zach MacEwen will join us at 12:30. Really excited to talk to him. 650 is the number to text in. We want to hear your thoughts as well. And, you know, Sat, you were talking about Jake Virtanen, and he has been the dominant discussion point so far in training camp. But I think you make a really good point that just, and especially in a day like today, where the lines are completely mixed up, you can't read too much into the fact that Jake Virtanen was an extra. And I wonder, you know, we've seen the tough love approach from Travis Green to Jake Virtanen before. You know, we all remember back to original training camp this season when Jake had to skate with the third group because he didn't meet his conditioning goals. And Travis Green was quite upfront about that. And, you know, Jake's going through it now. He's getting a lot of scrutiny, getting a lot of attention, probably not having a very fun time at training camp. But what happened when the season started at the beginning of the year? There was Jake Virtanen in the lineup, right? Travis Green used the tough love, but then he got him into the games when it counted. Do you think that's maybe the most likely scenario here, is that this is just Travis Green, you know, doing what he does with Jake Virtanen, trying to get him up to speed?
It's been pretty much the same story most training camps. And by all accounts, Jake didn't show up out of shape in this training camp or anything, right? I'm not saying you're suggesting that, but he didn't show up unprepared
for sure
this camp, as has been suggested in the past, right? This is more related to performance more than anything, how guys are looking so far, and the intensity so far in training camp, by all accounts, has been high considering they've been off for 4 months. And maybe Jake just hasn't been able to meet that level quite yet. And Travis, when he sees Jake not being where he's at, it's the same, you know, carrot and the stick type of treatment, right? Like, that's shown to be the most effective way to get Jake to be at his best, too. Every player needs to be addressed differently, right? Some guys need a pat on the back. Some guys need a kick in the butt. Some guys need to have an honest conversation. It's really different about how you go about things with Jake. It seems Travis has a pretty good idea about how to get Jake to the level he needs to be at if he's not quite there. What will worry me about Jake is if we get through the weekend and next week and he's still an extra and you get to the preseason game, that's where the alarm bells go off for me. That if he's not in the lineup for the preseason game, that's by all accounts going to be a dress rehearsal because you only get one game, right? So that's going to be probably the lineup you're going to start against Minnesota game one. That's the one to keep an eye on. So if Jake's not in that preseason game, then be super worried. But I still look at Jake And I still think that his speed and overall what he can bring just with some of his dynamic skill sets, even if it is being used 8 or 9 minutes in a game, that he still gets in over Zach McEwen, I would bet. Because as good as McEwen has been so far, we're going to talk to him coming up in a bit. I'm just not sure yet that 1 week of camp really just puts him into that spot. So Jake still has a lot of time here to turn this around.
It's a good point about that preseason game. You know, that barring an injury, I think, happening in that game or at practice after or something, that's going to be the lineup you see against Minnesota. Because as you said, you don't have any time to ramp up. That has to be a dress rehearsal. The one thing that concerns me a little from Jake Virtanen's perspective about his chances of getting in the lineup is, you know, listen, okay, I know Zach McEwen still has a lot of work to do to book his spot, but we've heard Travis Green say, hey, I really like the chemistry with Adam Gaudette and Antoine Roussel. That line has looked really good together. If Zach McEwen earns that spot and Travis just says, you know what, I can't go away from those guys, they're doing too well. Can Jake force his way into a fourth line role considering he doesn't kill penalties, or is Travis Green going to reserve that fourth line spot for, you know, guys like Jay Beagle and Brandon Sutter and Tyler Mott who can help out on the penalty kill? So that might be my concern, is that it's kind of that third line spot or bust for Virtanen. And if he doesn't earn that spot, he might not find a home in the lineup.
Yeah, it's not going to be Zach and Jake in the lineup. It'll be one of those guys, yeah. Right? And if, say, Sutter can't go on the fourth line or somebody else gets injured, they're going to put Louis in there. And Louis still has a chance to be in the opening day lineup. And Louis, people got mad at me last night because I said, hey, you know, Louis is actually one of the better fourth liners. I'm not the only person who said this as far as just a fourth line role and defensive abilities and PK abilities. And you know, I've talked to some people around the team and they've been impressed by how good a shape Louis's been showing up to camp, how hard he's worked so far in camp. Like even if Louis doesn't go in for an injured player, he still has a chance to get in the lineup on the third line. So don't count out Louis. And people got mad like, oh, Louis's only here because of this. There's no way he plays. Believe me, all Travis and the coaching staff care about is beating the Minnesota Wild. All they care about is coming up with the best lineup they think is going to win game one, game two, game three, and so on. That's all they're worried about. This isn't like the regular season or like years past where you have time to ramp up after training camp. You still have some leeway before the playoffs start. Game one of the playoffs starts right away. So don't count out Louis being a safe option. And in the playoffs, as much as coaches, you know, want to push the pace, they usually default to being conservative and having guys out there that don't make a lot of mistakes. So don't be shocked about Louis Erickson still fighting for that spot. But if all things are equal, you want to have Jake's size, physicality when he does decide to play that game, and that speed in the lineup generally, because they do lack that throughout their lineup, a player like that.
So let's break it down exactly. Like, you know, we're talking about all these camp battles and can this guy get in? Can this guy get into the lineup? But, you know, in your mindset, how many spots are actually up for grabs here? We've got the Virtanen McEwen battle, which I do think is a legitimate battle for that right wing spot on the third line. But then it does kind of seem like the fourth line is going to be some combination of Mott, Beagle, Sutter, Erickson, right? It's going to be three of those four guys because they can all kill penalties. You know, are there any other realistic, first of all, I mean, how do you judge those battles right now? And are there any other realistic lineup spots up for grabs?
So Sutter, you know, he was back and practicing today, not with one of the top lines, right? He was an extra skating in and out. I don't think it's clear cut that Sutter is in the lineup 100% if he is healthy. There is a bit of a battle against Louis there, because I do think Louis has impressed enough again that he has a serious chance of actually being there for the third line and the fourth line, and also Michael Ferland to an extent as well. Now, because Ferland hasn't played at all and barely played at all the past year, even if he looks great over the next week, it might be difficult. But let's just, you know, for a moment, let's just assume it's those four players. Ferland, I guess, an outside chance, but it's about a 65% chance that Sutter, if he's healthy, has that spot, and a 35% chance, I'd say, that Erickson could take it away from Brandon Sutter. And then it comes down to that one spot on the third line, which is between Virtanen and McEwen, and the distant long shot being Michael Ferland. And if Ferland gets in, that means you would have to move some guys around in the lineup. But I do think Ferland is still vying for one of the spots there with McEwen and Virtanen.
Yeah, Ferland is a name that's really interesting to me because, you know, we talked about the exhibition game against Winnipeg being a dress rehearsal. But if there's one player who could get in, you know, purely as an addition, I think it would be Michael Ferland, just because he's played so little hockey this season, that they almost need to have him in that game for if they're going to use him against Minnesota. And, you know, Travis Green put, as we said, got the line blender out, mixed up all his combinations, and there was Michael Ferlin playing on the fourth line with Beagle and Mott. I mean, do you see a realistic path for Michael Ferland, you know, earning the trust of the coaching staff and showing that he's physically ready to be in the lineup for against Minnesota?
I'd still say it's a long shot, especially for game one. Now, let's say the Canucks lose game one or something, don't look great, or, you know, they're down in the series. Then I can see them going to Ferland. But unless Ferland just absolutely rockets in the scrimmages and shows that he's one of the better players, it's also a long-term safety thing too, right? Like, you're not quite sure where he's at. You don't want him to come in and play poorly and hurt the team and then ruin his confidence. And also the team doesn't want to put a guy in who hasn't played, you know, a competitive hockey game in, you know, over 9 months, really, when you kind of count in how quickly he left that Leafs game and he barely skated in Utica as well. So that doesn't even count as playing a full game. It just seems like a, you know, big ask for me, Jamie, to see him there for game one. And when you have some guys who showed up to camp and still look good, and, you know, as much as people are, you know, worried about Vertanen, and I still look at Vertanen getting the edge over Ferland because he can score. He has the speed. He has the size. And yeah, he has played a lot of hockey this past season. I'm intrigued by Ferland. I wish him the best. But right now, if I'm putting money down, Jamie, I don't expect to see Ferland unless the Canucks lose or something or are down in the series.
Yeah, with Ferland, you know, I becoming slightly more optimistic day by day, but I was so skeptical at the beginning that that's still at a very low level. You know what I mean? Like, it's, he's still got a long, long road to go before he beats out someone for a lineup spot, just because, I mean, the Canucks have so many forwards that they could legitimately call on in this series with everyone healthy. Text message here in the 650-650 inbox. This is from Torgy in Langley. He says, from what I've heard and seen and my opinion, I believe Louis should start on the fourth line. Hate on me, Canucks Nation. But there's a good argument to be made that as a penalty killer and as a guy you can rely on in your defensive zone, he might be the best option, legitimately the best option to put on that fourth line. So, Torgy, I'm with you. Yeah, people might not like it. It's an unpopular opinion, but you're onto something.
Defensively, Louis Erickson has been their best bottom six defensive winger this season. And, hey, listen, we can sit here and say it's, you know, yeah, big deal. We're talking about the tallest, you know, three-story building. It's not a huge deal. We're talking about, you know, the levels aren't very high when we're talking about the bottom six of this team. But if you're looking to give yourself the best chance, and if you want defensive value, Louis fits in there for that fourth line. But Brandon Sutter, because he can play down the middle as well, he can take faceoffs. He's also good on the PK. That's why I still think that he will get in. And if Sutter is healthy and ready to go, he's good on the PK. He's actually been decent at even strength this year when he's been healthy. Outside of just getting injured too much, Sutter actually played well when he was healthy this year in a bottom six role. So ideally, if you had, say, Sutter with Mott and Erickson, that would be pretty good. But they want to have Beagle in there as well because of how good he is now, how good he is in the faceoff dot. And he is good on the PK, generally speaking. And he also provides some extra oomph for this team and that experience that they want for a guy who's reliable. But if we're being honest about things, my fourth line probably would be Mott, Sutter, and Erickson over Beagle, Sutter, and Mott.
Yeah, I think the ideal for Travis Green is probably to have Sutter and Beagle both in the lineup, just because you have the flexibility then with Sutter to play him on the wing or move him into center if you need. And they like having that option, obviously. But yeah, Erickson, he's not a joke candidate. Let's put it that way. It's Canuck Central here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd and Satyar Shah on the show today. And we're going to be joined by Canucks forward Zach McEwen coming up in just about 10 minutes time. Really excited for that. We'll try to get you Travis Green's post-practice comments today as well at some point in the show. But Sat, I want to touch on this quickly, not strictly Canucks related, but the big news in the NHL today was the Hart Trophy candidates officially announced. No surprise here. Nathan MacKinnon, Leon Draisaitl, Artemi Panarin are the three finalists. Who do you like to take home the award this year?
I'm going to go with Leon Draisaitl because of just look at the numbers he put up. And
technically the Rangers haven't made the playoffs, right? They got to play in the play-in too. So I think Draisaitl is going to win it. And as much as we can look at the underlying numbers, and there is a lot of evidence there that suggests that even strength, maybe defensively, he wasn't great. Sometimes you can overthink things. And when Leon Draisaitl was absolutely tearing the league apart and scoring as much as he was, don't overthink things. Just give the awards to the guy. And look at how the Edmonton Oilers performed this year, despite not having the best roster. But McDavid and Draisaitl stayed healthy. They ran roughshod over everybody else, and that team put itself in a very solid position this season, right? So I'm going to just default and give it to Leon Draisaitl. I understand the analytical debate for McKinnon. I understand the analytical debate for Panarin. I understand all those things. But let's not overthink things. The guy had a fantastic season, and sometimes we downplay the raw numbers too much. And in this case, I'm going to give him a boost on it. So I say Leon Draisaitl is the rightful Hart Trophy winner if he does indeed win it.
Yeah, it's tough when you're picking between guys like this because, I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to slam Nathan McKinnon or Artemi Panarin, right? They're all great players. They all had incredible years. You know, the numbers for Panarin that get trotted out are incredible. And you look at his 5-on-5 scoring and how good the Rangers were at 5-on-5 with him on the ice versus without him on the ice. It's a really, really stunning differential. But at the same time, you know, okay, sure, Leon Draisaitl did a lot of his damage on the power play. Well, those goals count too, right? Those goals help you beat other teams. You know, maybe it's harder to dominate at 5-on-5, but power play goals count just as much as even strength goals. So I think you're right. Sometimes we overthink it a little bit and we look at the point totals and say, yeah, but what did he do defensively? And it's like, well, maybe not much, but he was so good offensively. It doesn't really matter. So, you know, I'm not going to be outraged no matter who takes it home here, but I think Leon Draisaitl is a good choice. And from a Canucks perspective, Sat, you know, I know there were some people in the analytics community who were floating his name, Elias Pettersson's name, even as a dark horse Hart candidate this year or someone who should be in the conversation. You know, that was never going to happen. But how close do you think we are to seeing Elias Pettersson potentially be in that conversation in an upcoming season?
Maybe 15% more offensive production. So what, a year or two away from that? Because when you look at the defensive value Pettersson has and how smart he is on the ice, I call him a matrix player. Is the point I made a couple of years ago that when he's on the ice, the game evolves around him. He sees the game differently, and even if he's not the guy with the puck, he finds a way to open up space for others, and he finds a way to get to the right spot. He controls the play when he's on the ice just by the way he thinks and the way he moves, even away from the puck, and when he's trying to suggest where his teammates are going to go. So he's one of those guys that completely controls the flow of the game. In order to win the Hart Trophy, though, points matter. And the point I just made about Leon Draisaitl, hey, don't overthink things when a guy puts up as many points as he has. You're not going to win the Hart Trophy if somebody's scoring 110, 120 points and you have 90, for instance, right? Like, you're going to have to get into that 100-point range and be within the top 6 or 7 point getters every year. Otherwise, you're not going to win the Hart Trophy. So that's just a 15, maybe 20% a bit more offensive production from Elias Pettersson. So another year or two, I think he's a legitimate candidate. And I think he was absolutely worthy of receiving some Hart Trophy votes. The thing is, the Hart Trophy voting isn't just about giving the first place votes. You give votes for a number of spots. You nominate a few different players. And sometimes just giving guys, you know, that appreciation matters as well.
We'll keep that conversation going after the break here. Zach McEwen, Canucks forward, going to join us. It's Canucks Central on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back. It is Canucks Central here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd, and not on the program today, but joining me here on Canucks Central, it is Satyar Shah, as we continue to get you all caught up on the latest news and happenings from Canucks training camp. And in a few minutes here, Zach McEwen is going to join us for a chat. We'll get his thoughts on what has been a very, very good training camp for Zach McEwen so far. A couple of texts coming in here at 650, 650. Hit us up if you want to join the conversation. This one is unsigned. He says, Leon Draisaitl would not be a Hart Trophy candidate if he didn't play with Connor McDavid. Hashtag fact. Not sure how I feel about that one. I mean, part of Draisaitl's candidacy for this is the fact that when McDavid went out for a short period, he turned it up to a whole other level, carried the Oilers during that stretch. So I think the reason Leon Draisaitl is maybe the Hart front runner is what he did without Connor McDavid in the lineup this year.
Did we take anything away from the Sedins because they played together? Or did we always make the argument that these guys make each other better? They can't, you know, coexist without one another. And then you kind of saw flashes of one without the other. You're like, oh yeah, these guys are still amazing without having the one. Remember Henrik Sedin, the year Daniel broke his foot, the final 15, 20 games or so. And Henrik went off and won the Hart Trophy in 2010 that year. And he proved to everybody that, yeah, you don't need your twin to be a great player. And these guys aren't like the Sedins. They don't have that same capacity and the same read-off of each other, but the two great players. And just because they're excellent together or they benefit from one another doesn't mean you should take away from their candidacy.
And it's so easy to say, like, oh, well, anyone would score a whole bunch of points playing with Connor McDavid. Well, not like this, you know, like we've seen other players play with McDavid and yeah, they get a boost, but they don't turn into Leon Draisaitl, right? He's obviously an elite player in this league. And it's a really good comparison, Sat, between, you know, the Draisaitl McDavid situation and the Sedins. You know, I think it drove people nuts here in Vancouver when they would get written off. Oh, well, they just because they're twins, just because they play together, that's the only reason it works. Like, no, they're legitimately really good players by themselves. I don't think we should make that mistake when it comes to McDavid and Draisaitl either. Just waiting for Zach McKeown to finish up practice here, and then he's going to join us. And I wanted to take another, you know, we talked in the first segment, Sat, about the camp battles and the fight between Zach McKeown and Jake Virtanen for that spot on the third line. We've looked at it a lot from the perspective of, you know, what has Jake Virtanen done to lose that spot? What is he doing poorly? But I want to flip it around a little before we talk to McKeown here and, you know, talk about why Zach McKeown has made this a difficult decision, has even made this a conversation, because this is just another part of an incredibly impressive rise to prominence for McKeown, isn't it?
We always talk about players peaking earlier nowadays, right? And yeah, that is generally true. But just like everything in life, everything's not black and white. There's a big gray area as well. And there are outliers. And for as much as there are trends that are worthy and you should really pay attention to, there are players that kind of come along a bit differently. Zach McKeown is a perfect example of that. He's a guy who was undrafted, who kind of made hay in the QMJHL a lot later than most players. The Canucks signed him, and there was a lot of uproar when the Canucks signed him as an undrafted free agent. They're like, who's this guy? Couldn't even put up numbers until he was an overager. Like, what's the point of even signing him? But he just kept getting better year after year after year. Ever since the Canucks signed him, Jamie, every single year, he has gotten exponentially better. And a big reason why the Canucks didn't want to put him into the lineup a couple of years ago too much is because they were so happy with how he received tutelage, how hard he worked to make himself better, and how dedicated he was during the season and in the offseason to continually improve. So they looked at a guy that was just like a sponge and said to themselves, we can probably push him into the NHL right away and give him a bunch of ice time and make him into a fourth liner. But let this guy kind of grow and cook and let's see what he becomes. And now McKeown, despite not yet becoming an everyday NHL player, he played well enough this past season, Jamie, that the Canucks said he's an everyday NHLer. The question is, can he play every single game? But he's also improved himself defensively and how he thinks on the ice. And he's improved his speed, two really critical things for the way Travis Green envisions his team to play. So if you look at Zach McKeown, you're right. It's not so much about what has Jake done or hasn't done. It's what Zach McKeown continually keeps doing and how he impresses his team by continually getting better each and every week.
And, you know, you make a point about how he's dramatically improved every season. You know, going back to his junior career, but especially since he's turned pro. And, you know, it reminds me a little bit of Alex Burrows. And I don't want to drop that comparison. You listen, Alex Burrows is a Ring of Honor, you know, an all-time Canucks great. I'm not saying that's what Zach
McKeown. No, but there's a similar trope, right?
Yeah.
As far as like late bloomer undrafted.
Exactly. And the thing that was so impressive about Alex Burrows, especially early in his career, was the way he added a new element to his game, right? He came up first just purely an agitator, right? Go out on the fourth line, run around, get under team skin. Then he developed his defensive game, right? He could kill penalties. He was part of a checking line then with Ryan Kessler. Then he got the opportunity, showed he could chip in offensively and play with the Sedins, right? Ended up getting some power play time occasionally. He just kept adding things to his game. And that's what I see happening with Zach McKeown. Because, again, you know, he comes in. You look at him. Okay, 6'4", big body, undrafted free agent. His job is going to be go out there and throw his weight around. He can do that. But as you mentioned, he's really defensively responsible as well. He can win those puck battles. He can go up against other really good offensive players on the other team and hold his own. And that's the characteristic more than anything that I think is going to earn him a shot if he does get the chance to play on the third line again against Minnesota for the Vancouver Canucks. And the other thing that's, you know, tying into his developmental process, you know, we've heard so much about Utica and how they develop players there, whether they're doing a good job of developing players there. I mean, Zach MacEwen is a home run success story for the Utica Comets development system.
He's been one of the few really big success stories, right? And there's been a lot on the other end. And, you know, it's a whole different discussion trying to get into the whole Utica setup and everything and, you know, how much investment truly there is and how far they are. So there are many things there that go into it. But Zach MacEwen is their best case for development, and to a lesser extent, even a guy like Cole Lind, who last year came in and it looked like he was lost. And people made the case, and it was a legitimate argument. Is he better off just going back to major junior instead of getting his teeth kicked in the AHL? They didn't play him a lot. Remember, there was this outrage, well, why is Cole Lind not playing more? Why are other guys playing ahead of him? Well, the guy just wasn't ready for that level yet. So they kind of took, you know, they took it slow with him. They let him progress slowly. They worked in practice, made him stronger, tried to make him a bit faster. And as the year went on, he got better. And then towards this season, he was incredible, right? Like, he had a really solid season for the AHL level. And yeah, he's still a couple steps behind the NHL side of things, but he's been in one of those good stories. But no development story for the Canucks is stronger than Zach MacEwen's. You know, the question is, can they replicate what they did with Zach with some other guys and make them into NHL players? And now it comes down to Zach, essentially. When he gets the opportunity, can he do what Burrows did and carve out a place for himself and never come out of the lineup again?
You know, it's interesting. We talk about the Utica development thing, and I wonder how different that conversation is if Olli Juolevi never suffers the injuries he does, right? And just right. continues on a straight line in his development. Because then all of a sudden you have a high draft pick, you know, who does time at Utica and makes it to the NHL. And that discussion probably looks a whole lot different. We're waiting on Zach MacEwen here. He's just finishing up at Canucks practice. He's going to join us shortly. Some good text coming into the 650-650 text message inbox. We had one earlier saying Dreisaitl only a Hart Trophy candidate because he plays with McDavid. This rebuttal is from Torgy and Langley. He says, I absolutely hate the Oilers, but Dreisaitl is a horse, a purebred triple crown. I could not disagree with more of that last texter. He had a year. He deserves the Hart. Yeah, I'm with you on that one, Torgy. Leaf fan Steve chiming in on that point as well. He says, Jordan even said there's no Jordan without Scottie Pippen. That's a good point. I like the cross sport comparison there, Steve.
Well, and as much as, you know, Kobe and Shaq hated each other and they, you know, ultimately ended up divorcing as far as basketball goes, they won three titles together and they made each other better, right? And that's kind of what happens. You still need somebody to drive you and push you on the same team. It's not just one player. So don't take something away from a guy who had an incredible season just because he plays with the most incredible and most talented hockey player in the world, Connor McDavid, right? I like this point Jordan from Saskatoon also makes to our text line 650-650 saying you guys are talking lots about, you know, Zach and Jake, but he says Gaudette has a lot to prove. And is he going to be a guy that plays a major role here in the qualifying round? He has a chance to cement his role here on the team and improve on his season. Like, Gaudette is a guy that took a big leap this year, and I think Jordan is right. He's a guy that still has to prove that he can be an everyday two-way third-line centerman. And as we mentioned in the first little bit of the show, it was interesting to see Miller and Toffoli get, you know, a few rushes with that line today at practice. Because if you're looking to spread things out and run three lines and help out Gaudette defensively, those are the types of players you would put with them.
It's a really good point from Jordan from Saskatoon texting in, because, you know, Gaudette, he has flown under the radar. And he did such a good job of establishing himself in the lineup this year. But, you know, you mentioned his two-way ability. He is not that traditional third-line center, really. That's not how they've used him. He's never going to be a true shutdown guy, but that's something to watch, is can he develop that side of his game to really cement that role? And then the other thing with Adam Gaudette is, you know, we've talked about this with Jake Virtanen. We've talked about it with Troy Stetcher, Jacob Markstrom, but you know, Adam Gaudette needs a new contract after this year. It's a different situation. He's in the same situation Brock Besser was last summer, where he's not eligible to receive an offer sheet. So he doesn't have a ton of leverage, but Adam Gaudette, you know, if he goes out and has a really strong play-in series against Minnesota, let's say the Canucks advance, he does well there too, and all of a sudden he's got some playoff success on his resume, he can go into those negotiations, you know, in a much stronger position when it comes to negotiating his new salary.
The only thing with Gaudette that kind of hurts him is the same spot that Besser was in last year, right?
Yeah.
Because of the, you know, the first year kind of got burned when he signed, didn't play over, you know, five games and all that sort of stuff, or over nine games. He doesn't have Arbrights and he cannot be offer sheeted. So he really has no recourse but to accept any offer that Canucks push. I mean, he could always sit out, right? But it gives the Canucks a lot of leverage in a year where they are cap strapped. So if they really want to kick that contract can down the road another year, he's the prime candidate actually to squeeze and give him a small 1 year contract in like the $1.5 million range or something, which seems absurd for a guy who's going to score over 40 points, but it's leverage. And these are the things that he's kind of forced with. But here's the thing. If Gaudette plays extremely well, does it make the Canucks think that, hey, we should maybe lock him up right now?
We'll get back to that conversation in just a second, but we're very pleased right now to be joined by Canucks forward Zach MacEwen, fresh off the ice at training camp. Zach, thanks very much for making some time for us. How are you today?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
We're thrilled to have you on, and you know, you've had a great start to camp. You've looked great in every session and every scrimmage, and you know, just off the bat, what do you think it is that's made you, you know, hit the ground running here in training camp?
I think I had some good preparation before camp, and you know, I kind of just came in with an open mind and, you know, just kind of ready to work and see how things played out. And, you know, things are going good right now, but definitely want to keep building on it and, you know, keep progressing.
What was the message like from Travis Green and the rest of the coaching staff to you coming into this training camp? Because, you know, we heard from Travis Green before the pause and everything say that you had established yourself as an everyday NHL player. What was their message to you in terms of, you know, the role they want to see you play and how you could earn a spot on this team?
Well, it was, you know, I knew coming in, you know, nothing was going to be handed to me, like, that's for sure. So, you know, I came in just, you know, ready to work. And I think, you know, just the way things are progressing and, you know, the way that I'm feeling on the ice, it's going well right now. But, you know, I still want to be reliable on the ice and, you know, be trustworthy and, you know, kind of try to just earn my spot and make it a hard decision.
Well, I know, Zach, you have made it a hard decision over the past year with how well you've played and how you've progressed. And, you know, Jamie and I were talking about how even during the season, you're very diligent to take advice, especially in Utica, and keep working on your game. And every offseason, you have incrementally improved, whether it is your puck skills, your speed, how quickly you get around the ice, your agility, and also your defensive play. That defensive side of things sometimes, you know, takes a while to figure out, especially at the NHL level, but through training camp, you look really good. How confident do you kind of feel through the whole system side of things and understanding where to be and what to do at the right times?
That part of my game, I feel, is coming along nicely. You know, there's lots of help around here too, you know, just clearing things up and, you know, making sure that, you know, I'm knowing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing and, you know, the right reads and stuff like that. So, I think I'm happy with the way it's going. Definitely, like I said, can still build and, you know, keep working on that every day and, you know, keep getting more and more better with that.
Have you been a bit surprised or impressed by how high the intensity has been for training camp, considering there's been 4 months off and it's the, you know, second training camp in less than a year?
It's good to see because, you know, you don't have much time to get ready. You know, you're jumping right into the playoffs. You know, it's, you know, whoever's going to be ready first is, you know, going to have the upper hand. So I think there's a great sense of urgency like that from a lot of guys. And, you know, that's something that's really going to help us.
Travis Green got the lineup blender out today, Zach, for practice. But before today, you'd been playing a lot with Antoine Roussel and Adam Gaudette. You've gotten some good reviews from the coaching staff as well, that unit. What is it about the three of you playing together that seems to click?
You know, I think we're both, or all three of us are kind of just, you know, straightforward players. You know, getting pucks in, getting hard on forechecks and recovering, and then, you know, that gives us success whenever we're, you know, when we're recovering pucks in the offensive zone. And, you know, we can play in the offensive zone and, you know, kind of generate our offense from there. So I think we kind of just feed off each other that way. And, you know, it's, you know, we've got some good chemistry for sure.
Canucks forward Zach MacEwen joining us here on Sportsnet 650. It's Canucks Central. Antoine Roussel, of course, as you said, a similar player, straightforward player. And, you know, I look at him as a guy who he can be really physical. He can get under the opponent's skin, but then he can also chip in offensively. Is that kind of the mold that you see your game in? Someone who can bring that combination of physicality, defensive responsibility, and also a little bit of offense as well?
Yeah, for sure. You know, Roos has been a big help to me ever since, you know, kind of making the jump this year and playing with him. You know, he's always a guy to, you know, kind of point me in the right direction and, you know, little tips, little pointers. He's always talking on the ice. You know, he's got great communication. So I think that's where some of our chemistry comes from, just how well we communicate on the ice and, you know, just his all around, you know, motivation. And, you know, he's a guy that's going to fire you up to get you going too. So, cause you don't want to, you know, you don't want to be the guy that's not along for the ride with him. So it's, you know, it's a good, good energy that we got. And, you know, I feed off it.
What's harder, doing what he tells you to do on the ice or understanding what he's telling you when he's yelling at you on the ice?
No, it's usually pretty good. He's not too bad. So I, you know, hear the odd French word, but you know, I know a little French, so I can kind of get by.
Oh, and that's one of the cool things about this team, too. You talked about that sense of urgency, right, Zach? And, you know, a lot of guys kind of were new on the squad this year that were added via trade. And, you know, Quinn Hughes came in and you were joining the team a bit later on. But there seems to be a really good rapport and camaraderie with this group and that urgency that kind of exists. And I'm sure a lot of teams in camp have the same thing after this layoff. But there is something here about this group that really wants to play for each other in this playoffs.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, everybody knows the opportunity that we have in front of themselves. And I think the biggest thing is, you know, making the most of that opportunity and just being as ready as you possibly can be for when it's time to play.
Zach MacEwen, Canucks forward, joining us for a couple more minutes here on Canucks Central. There's so many unique things about this training camp situation in this NHL season, Zach. One of them, of course, is, you know, we're going straight into playoff type hockey, the play-in series, the qualifying round, whatever you want to call it. It's playoff style hockey. And we always hear about the intensity, the physicality, how everything steps up a notch in the playoffs. Do you see that as, you know, a potential or as a chance for a player like you to have an even bigger impact than normal, since we're going right into those extra physical, extra intense games?
I think so. I mean, you know, every hockey player loves playoff time. You know, me especially, playoffs are, you know, my kind of playing style. Everything is, you know, a lot more amped up and, you know, a little more physical, a little more chippy. So, you know, I'm excited to, you know, to see what it brings and, you know, just be ready for anything.
And Zach, one thing Sat and I were talking about just before you joined us is, you know, your progression through the Canucks system since you signed with the organization and how much you developed while playing with the Utica Comets. You know, that's been a big discussion point over the last year or so for fans is, you know, what the environment for prospects and young players is like in Utica. Why do you think you were able to grow so much as a player playing for the Comets?
You know, I think they, you know, they give you the tools, you know, they, you know, the coaching staff in Utica, the skills guys, you know, in Utica and here, you know, they give you the stuff to, you know, help your game progress it. It's just, you know, taking it and running with it and, you know, really trying to adapt to what gives you success, I think is, you know, kind of what I had to figure out in my first year pro is, you know, you're jumping into pro, obviously you got to change your game from the way you're playing in junior. You know, a lot of stuff doesn't fly in the pro level. So I think it's just, you know, adapting your game, knowing what gives you success and, you know, building off of what that is. And then, you know, adding different little parts to it. And, you know, they give you all the tools to do that here. So I kind of just took it and ran with it, I think.
He is Canucks forward Zach MacEwen. Zach, thanks so much for taking some time to chat with us today. We really appreciate it. And best of luck on having a great rest of training camp here.
No problem, guys. Thank you.
There he is. That is Canucks forward Zach MacEwen, the breakout star of Canucks training camp. And some really interesting thoughts about, you know, his role on the team and the mood around the team and also how he's been able to grow his game coming up through the Canucks system. And yeah, you got a sense for it, sat there just speaking with him, you know, the confidence. And he has, what really struck me is he has such a clear idea of what he needs to do to be successful in this environment.
Well, that's the biggest thing. When you know what you need to do to be successful, it makes everything else so much easier. It doesn't mean that executing is easy, but half the battle is understanding who you are and how to be the best version of yourself. And that's oftentimes one of the biggest challenges for young guys, especially guys that have a really good dynamic skill set. It's like, okay, what am I? Am I going to be that high-end guy? Am I more of a second-line guy? Am I more of a grinder? What am I? Am I a defensive specialist? Figure out what you need to be. And Zach is figuring out what he is as a player. And even if that isn't a bona fide top six scorer, it can be still a very high-impact middle six player.
And, you know, that's something he kind of mentioned when I asked him about Utica as well. I believe he said, listen, hey, they give you the tools, right? They're up front. They say this is what you have to do. They put it out in front of you, and then it's just up for you to do it, right? And you know, that can be tough to hear because it sounds like maybe you're pinning the blame on the players or some other players for not developing, but that's all you can really ask for from a developmental situation, right? Is give the guys the tools, give them the environment, but then at a certain point they have to pick it up and run with it.
Yeah, the question always comes down to what have you done as a group to get through to every single player? And if you've done everything possible, you can get through because the player just doesn't want to put in the work, well, hey, then there isn't much you can do. You can't force somebody to want it more than you want it, right? Somebody, you can't have a player want it less than you want it as a coach or as a trainer or as somebody giving advice. That just cannot be the case. So that's the biggest hurdle for players. Then it comes down to how well does a team identify each player and what each player needs and the plan they need and the way to reach that player so they can become their best. So I think it goes both ways. But regardless of the overarching theory or if you like what they've done development wise or not, it's really clear that they had the right plan for Zach MacEwen and he completely bought into that plan, and that's why he's successful.
Just before we get out of here, Sat, you mentioned it off the top of the show, but tomorrow Andrew Walker, your regular co-host, will be sitting in with me on Canuck Central. I have never hosted a show with Walker before, so I just got to ask, and I know this might be too long for the amount of time we have yet, but if you had to give me one piece of advice on working with Walker, what would it be?
He doesn't bite. It's all bark. So don't be afraid at all. Nothing to worry about.
I love it. No, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun with Walks tomorrow. And Sat, you'll be back on Friday. That's going to be great. Reach Deep is up next. They'll have Travis Green's comments, a lot of other Canucks content as well. That's coming up next. It's the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.